chapter 1 and chapter 2, God himself called Job blameless. So Elihu's whole stand here, by the way, I want to say something about false witness. We talked about it on Sunday. I think it's kind of interesting that we had that example on Sunday, and now we have one in the Old Testament, an example of false witness. It was one of the big 10. Don't do this. Bearing false witness can destroy somebody's life. It can destroy their reputation. Some people can never escape false testimony and false accusation against them. That's how powerful our words are. What is false witness? Is false witness just telling outright bold-faced lies about somebody? Well, it can be. But false witness could also be what Elihu is doing right here. Partial truths. You heard part of it accurately. You didn't hear all of it accurately. And you make innuendos and assumptions based on the part that you think you heard. And the next thing you know, you have slanted the whole story in a way that people are not hearing the truth. You may think it's the truth, but it's very damaging, and I think that's something we can learn. I don't blame Job for feeling cornered and saying, look, every single one of you guys have told me that I have to repent. He says, I don't have to repent of stuff I didn't do. And I have been cornered that same way. But he was no way claiming to be sinless. And God backs him up in his claim to be blameless. So I've got three or four little rabbit trails in the next part of this chapter, so hang in there. It's important stuff. Like I said, Elihu has some, I think, some really valuable things to say. He's just totally wrong about Job. He's actually right about God. He says a lot of true things about God and God's ways. The problem is they don't apply to Job. His whole opinion about what Job should do is colored because of stuff he thinks Job said that Job didn't say. And that also is very easy to do. Have you ever been surprised when you found out the whole story about something and realized that you'd been wrong for years about somebody? You'd misjudged them? I tell you, I yearn for that day for people that have wrong ideas about me. I just yearn for it. And the Lord speaks to me that I need to yearn for that for myself too, because I can be wrong about people. I can misjudge them. So he's going to straighten Job out by saying, look, you know, that whole thing, I heard you with my own ears say this. Sorry. Anger does affect our hearing. So I'm going to answer you. God is greater than man. Is that true? Yes, it is. So why do you contend with him? That's actually a very good question. Because he does not give an accounting of any of his words, and that's what the New King James says, but the Hebrew word is a lot broader word than words. It can mean actions. It can mean your whole modus operandi, your whole way of doing things. That's why the Amplified Bible says God does not give account of any of his actions. Doesn't have to. Accounting, I looked that word up. It means a defense or an explanation. This is my first rabbit trail. I don't think you have to be very old to have remembered a time in our country when there was a sense of reverence on people when it came to God. Even non-religious people had a certain reverence for God. And that's really shifted in our society. Even church people have the sense of entitlement that God had better explain himself to me or I'm just not going to believe in him. And something's really askew. What Elihu says here is really true. God is God. He does not have to offer any apologies. He doesn't have to account for his actions. It's what Paul said about the potter and the clay. You know, does the clay have a right to tell the potter what to make him into? Well, if you're an American, if you're American clay, you betcha. But see, we don't. Something's out of whack when we feel like God has to explain himself. I remember having this conversation with him over a very difficult issue in my life. I tried everything. I tried stamping my foot. Just, that won't work. Just doesn't work. The whole, I'm going to hold my breath until I turn blue. Doesn't work with God. You can't be swayed. And so then I just whined. I just need to know. I just need to know. And he says, no, you don't. If you needed to know, I'd tell you. Because I love you. What you need to do is trust me. That's what you need to do. And if you're not going to trust me, unless I explain everything, you're going to have a rough ride. Because even if I tried to explain to you, you don't have the software. Your hard drive would fry. You just don't have all the facts. You can't see everything the way I see them, he said to me. I grew up in a church that sang all those old mountain hymns, and I have to admit, I really like them. Farther along, we'll know all about it. Farther along, we'll understand why. Cheer up, my brother. Live in the sunshine. We'll understand it all. By and by, another one I used to like was, we'll talk it over. In the by and by, we'll talk it over, my Lord and I. I'll ask the reasons, he'll tell me why. When we talk it over in the by and by. Bogus. Do you think when you get to heaven, in absolute bliss, and you see God face to face, and you know everything the way it truly is, that you're going to walk up and tap him on the shoulder and say, you know that thing you did back in 1980? Would you explain that to me, please? Not me. I'm going to be hiding somewhere in the corner just hoping there's not a recount, you know, that no one's going to say, hey, what's he doing here? I'm just going to be glad I'm there. So Elihu, I think, makes a really good point. But he's also misquoting because he thinks Job's arrogant because he didn't admit that he was a sinner or that he was guilty. He thinks he's a hypocrite just like the other guys do, but it's not true. And because of that, his whole tack through this whole argument is just like the other guys. If you would just get right with God, everything would be good. And by the way, this whole thing where you say, you know, God is treating you unfairly, God doesn't have to give you any apologies or explanations for anything. He's God. That is true. But you know what? It's spoken by a guy who is not suffering. It was spoken by a guy who didn't say anything until he was mad. So you're not getting a real fair hearing, and that, of course, that's happened to me. It's probably happened to you. Some church person comes along, and you're in pain, and they're not, and then they just unload on you with their high-powered doctrine gun. And I think Job did amazingly well, considering that the very center of his life was all of a sudden absent. And it looked like God, who he'd had fellowship with, who he'd served faithfully his whole life, it looked like God was punching him in the nose and not telling him why. I don't blame him for being confused. I think it's miraculous that he didn't curse God, that he still trusted him. And there's something we pointed out last week, and don't lose sight of this. Even when Job says, maybe I did something wrong, I don't think I did, but I would, why isn't he talking to me? Why can't I just go before him? And if he's going to kill me, he's going to kill me. I still want to talk to him. Everything Job does is moving toward God, not away from God. And that's what a godly person does when they're suffering. God doesn't expect it to be easy. It's suffering. It's supposed to be hard, supposed to hurt. But what he wants is for us to move in his direction. As far as I'm concerned, Job is doing that all the way through here. He's not demanding that God explain himself. What he's asking is that if he's wronged God, and that's why all this happened, that God would please tell him what he did. And I don't think that's arrogance. I think that's humility. Elihu thought it was arrogance. But once again, he was mad. Be very aware of any judgments you make on people when you're mad. Because the lies flow like wine when I'm mad. Been there, done that. Verse 14 is our second rabbit trail. For probably the next 15 verses, he's going to talk about God does speak to us. He's got a little agenda here. He launches into a little lecture on the fact that, you know, God does speak to people. Job, you've been complaining that God's not talking. Well, God does talk. But sometimes people are just too dumb to perceive it. Well, let's listen to what he says, and we'll talk about ways that God speaks. Verse 14, God may speak in one way or in another, and yet man doesn't perceive it. In a dream, in a vision of the night, when deep sleep falls upon man while slumbering on their beds, then God opens the ears of man and seals their instruction. In order to turn man from his deed and cut off pride from man, to keep his soul from the pit and his life from perishing by the sword. God also speaks, verse 19, man is chastened with pain on his bed, with strong pain in many of his bones, so that his life abhor. Now he's doing the same thing the other guys do. He's looking right at all of Job's suffering, and he's poking him right there, because this is all descriptive of what Job is suffering. And the point that Elihu is making is, Job, God's trying to tell you something. God's trying to speak to you. You're not getting it. I'll read through this and before I address it. Man is chastened with pain on his bed, verse 19, and with strong pain in many of his bones, so that his life abhors bread, his soul abhors succulent food. His flesh wastes away from sight, and his bones stick out, which once were not seen. And then that's kind of a descriptive way of saying, you know, you used to be plump and happy, and now you can see bones that you never knew were there because he's so emaciated. That's exactly the description of Job. Verse 22, yes, his soul draws near the pit and his life to the executioners. I'm going to stop here and make some comments, because the next phrase, I believe, is prophetic. He talks about another way that God speaks, but we'll get there in a minute. Let's just back up a little bit. Boy, there are so many opinions on this. I've had a few conversations with people when they wanted me to tell them what they should do. And I've said, well, what is God telling you to do? And they said, well, we don't really believe that God speaks to people. And I thought, then why are you asking me? I didn't die for you. If God doesn't know what to do with your life, I'll just tell you my history. You for sure won't want me giving you any advice if you knew the decisions I've made in my life. Oh, well, Bob, there's two schools of thought on that. Oh, there's more than that. There's hundreds of schools of thought on how God speaks. I love Elizabeth Elliot's book on guidance because it's so thorough. She just uses scripture. She says, this is how God spoke here, this is how God spoke here, blah, 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 blah. And then I love this. It just shows her Yankee sense of humor. She says, and if you're going to make a list of all of the ways that God speaks to people, you better include donkeys. And he talks about Balaam and his donkey. You know, the whole thing Elijah said about the whirlwind, and God wasn't in the whirlwind, and the earthquake, God wasn't in the earthquake, and the fire, God wasn't in the fire. But then there was a still small voice, and God was in the still small voice. That's a very, I think, a very important way that God speaks. But you know what? God spoke to Moses through fire. He spoke to the Philippian jailer through an earthquake. So he pretty much is going to speak however he wants to. The problem is not, does God speak? The problem is, do we listen? That's our problem. God is speaking. I just don't, I think human beings, man's heart, especially Americans, we just have trouble hearing. We're too busy. Our brains are crowded. Try to find stillness somewhere. Humans were never meant to live with this kind of complicated information constantly bombarding us. It's no wonder we can't hear God's voice. He does speak. He speaks in a lot of ways. I think sometimes we don't hear it just because the way he speaks is just so natural. There's no echo on it. Bob. It doesn't sound anything like Charlton Heston, so it can't be God. Or pick somebody else with a great voice. The fact is, God is speaking. The real question is, am I listening? Am I tuned in? Was Job listening? Oh, man. He was listening as hard as he could, and he had a lot of distractions. Was God speaking to him? No. Was God trying to teach Job something? No. None of this happened because Job needed to learn something. It was completely separate from that. Read chapters 1 and 2. This all happened because Job was in fellowship with the Lord, not because he wasn't. Remember? What? He wasn't trying to teach Job anything. I'm sure Job learned some things. Well, he learned some things, but that wasn't why God did this. God didn't do that. That's my point. Because what Elihu is saying is, Job, the reason all this happened is because God's trying to speak to you and you're not listening. But that's not true. And folks, that's really important. God knew it wasn't true. Job knew it wasn't true. But all of his advisors and counselors were positive that they knew his heart better than he knew it. I think it takes a definite act of our will to say, Lord, I need you to speak to me. I need you to show me. And then, this is the hard part, then to wait on him and shut everything else out until he does. Now, ultimately, that is what happened with Job. And I'll bet you he did learn, you know, don't jump to conclusions. Just like I said, one of the most powerful lessons in the book of Job is that for a godly person, all disappointment with God is premature. Because God's always going to come out smelling good in the end. I'll never forget the first time that I started really thinking about hearing God's voice and being led by him. I was at church at Calvary Chapel in Costa Mesa, and I think it was a Sunday night study, and Chuck was teaching, and I'll never forget this illustration because I was so hung up on the mechanics of it. How will I know? If there's no echo on it, how will I know it's him? Here's what Chuck said. He said, suppose I told you that in this room right now, there was all kinds of music, classical music and heavy metal music and country western music, and there are beautiful images of places all around the world, And it's right here in this room. You think, but you know, if you have a transistor radio and you turn it to the frequency of the country western station, you'll hear that music. Does that music come into the room when you get your radio? No, it's already here. You just can't hear it till you turn into that frequency. It's the same way with television waves. Now, we know that, sort of. It is a little bit creepy, thinking that there's all kinds of pictures and music going on right now all around me. I think that's part of the way that helps me to understand God speaking. The problem is not that he's not speaking. The problem is I'm not tuned in. It requires silence. It requires waiting. I'm not good at either one of those. Most of us, our prayer is mostly talking, isn't it? Guess what? If we're praying and we're doing mostly talking, we're not going to hear God very much, are we? I mean, it's just displacement. I've heard some guys I really respect, I just disagree with them, say that God only speaks through the Bible. Here's what bothers me about that. Those same guys do not pray to the Bible. They pray to a person. I've heard them. But they expect a book to answer them back. You understand? They're limiting God's ability to speak to them, even though they're not praying to the book. It's kind of a fact that is lost on people sometimes. If you're talking to a person, then there should be every right that you would have to expect that the person's going to answer you. Does God speak through the Bible? Absolutely. What about all the people that God had relationships with before there was a Bible? Like Job, like Abraham, like pretty much everybody, all the way up to Moses. What did they do? Oh, yeah, you know, God just talked to him then, but he doesn't do that anymore because now we got Bibles. No, I'm sorry, I just can't buy that. So that's my little rabbit trail on God speaking. Elihu's point is that Job, the reason all this happened to you is that God's been trying to get through to you and you're just not listening. And so he has to use pain. C.S. Lewis said that pain is God's megaphone. It is true that, you know, God has my full attention when I'm suffering. Now, down in verse 23, he's going to make what I think are some very prophetic statements. See if what he describes when he talks about this way that God speaks, see if this sounds like anybody. God also speaks, as in parentheses, verse 23, if there is a messenger for him, a mediator, one among a thousand, which is a colloquial term for unique, someone completely unique, who can show man God's uprightness. And then God is gracious to him and says, deliver him from going down to the pit because I have found a ransom. And his flesh shall be young like a child. He shall return to the days of his youth. Sounds a lot like being born again, doesn't it? He shall pray to God, and God will delight in him. He shall see God's face with joy because God restores to man his righteousness. And then the man looks at other men and says, I've sinned, and I've perverted what was right, and it didn't profit me. And God will redeem his soul from going down to the pit, and his life shall see the light. God works all these things with a man to bring back his soul from the pit. Now, that whole passage sounds a lot like Jesus, doesn't it? It reminded me of Hebrews chapter 1, verses 1 and 2, that says, in past times, God in various times and various ways spoke to us through prophets.